This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Donald Trump officially announcing his stance on the climate change accords from Paris. We talk about that now on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Patriot Preacher. It's Friday. Get excited. The weekend is quickly approaching, and I'm feeling a lot better. Not quite 100%, but still doing all right. So good to be with each and every one of you this morning. Caleb Cockwitt here in for News Radio 1440. My assistant and producer, Joe, across the board from me. We're all glad to be with you this morning, and we do have the news of the day.
Well, I hope you feel... No, I mean, I'm glad to see you're feeling better.
I am feeling better.
Yeah, he is, ladies and gentlemen. I can tell by his expression on his face.
That's true.
And being Friday doesn't hurt either.
No, being Friday absolutely helps. I don't know if maybe Fridays cure me. Maybe that's it. I don't know. Either way. So, we will get on to the news, though. Here's what's funny to me. Because if you watched the news at all yesterday, you saw both sides get it 100% wrong. Because they have made this huge deal about Donald Trump formally announcing that we will be withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accords. And what you saw is both sides give essentially two different sides of exactly the same narrative. The Trump people came out in full force saying how wonderful it is that President Trump is against the Paris Climate Accords, which, by the way, I agree with, but we'll get to that later, saying that this means that we no longer have to adhere to it, that we're no longer beholden to foreign powers, globalists, and to the other people out there in the world that are big on climate change. Then you saw the other side, liberals, some going as far as to say that this is a treasonous act of war against the world, that America is no longer a world leader, that we've completely lost our mojo, and withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accords is the worst decision we've ever made as a country, that this proves that the Republicans just like dirty air, dirty water, and want the planet to die. So we saw two completely different sides of essentially the same narrative, and I'm about to explain to you why both of them are dead wrong. No president, regardless of who it may be, Trump, Obama, Bush, Reagan, Nixon, Washington, no matter how far back you go, not a single president in history has ever had the power to unilaterally withdraw from a treaty or to unilaterally consent to a treaty. I take you now to the Constitution. This is Article 2, under the powers of the president. So Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2. He, referring to the president, he shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators present concur, and he shall nominate, and goes on and talks about some other powers of the president, so I won't read the entire paragraph because it's getting into... judges and so on and so forth. But my point in all of this is, when Barack Obama signed us up for the Paris Accord, saying that the United States will adhere to the accords that are presented by this committee, he had no power to do so. Likewise, President Donald Trump, when he said we are withdrawing from the Paris Accords, he had no power to do so. Now, if we had done exactly what the Constitution says, which is Barack Obama said, yeah, we're going to go along with the Paris Accords, I'm going to sign it, and then we're going to bring it to the Senate, and the Senate had passed it by a 2/3 vote, well, then President Trump couldn't do anything about it, no matter what he wanted to. But that's not what happened. The Senate has never voted on the Paris Climate Accords. Ergo, it meant nothing when Barack Obama signed them. It means nothing now that President Donald Trump is withdrawing from them. So this is all essentially political theater. It has no meaning, no implications, and the regulations contained within these accords, the only way that any of them would have been implemented or put through is if the Senate had voted for them. And I'm not just saying on the accords themselves, because you have to keep in mind a lot of these regulations would have required government spending, which means not only would the Senate have had to consent to them, but it would have had to have gone through the legislative process of the House as well. Because the House has to approve all spending. So, really, the truth is, there was this massive media brouhaha over absolutely nothing. This had no effect on us policy-wise whatsoever. Without a two-thirds vote from the Senate to consent to any treaty, it means absolutely nothing. It meant nothing when Obama signed it, and it means nothing now that Trump withdrew. Now, in practical application, now I get that he's the president of the United States, which means he has a bigger platform than me. He has a far more prestigious title than me. He's an official representative of the United States. I understand all that. But in actual practical application, when we're talking about policy, President Obama signing the Paris Accords meant exactly as much as if me or Joe had signed the Paris Accords. If we had, for some reason, the United States sent us as the representative, said, you're going to be our representative at this Paris Climate Summit, and we said, okay, and we signed the Accords, that meant exactly as much policy-wise in practical application to the United States as when Barack Obama signed it, because he has no power nor authority granted to him by the United States Constitution that allows him to sign a treaty. So, essentially, this was all, not unlike climate change itself, a massive hoax. So, there you have it. Perfectly executed political analysis right there. All right, we're going to be back in just a second, and just wanted to make you aware of that. It's a Friday. We're going to take it a little bit easier, but at least for, I would say, the majority of the first hour, we're going to be hitting this Paris Climate Accord thing hard, because I think it's important. I think it's important to the country. Obviously, with all the debate that we saw that drummed up over essentially nothing, there's a lot of other people that think that climate change and these accords are important. So we're going to go through them, talk about them, the logistics of them. And in just a second, we're going to talk about the media fallout, which, you know, is always one of my favorite things to talk about. So all that is coming up in just a moment.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
A watchful eye must be kept on ourselves, lest, while we're building ideal monuments of renown and bliss here, we neglect to have our names enrolled in the annals of heaven. James Madison.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. We've got a couple slots open. We are going to go to the phones here in just a second, get your reactions to this. But I wanted to mention this right before we go to the phones just briefly. Your music, your memories, your life. Decades Rewind is coming to the Montgomery Performing Arts Center for one night only. That's going to be June 22nd to present the biggest hits of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Beginning at 8 a.m. this Friday, so that would mean they're available now. You can score two tickets for the price of one with our latest sweet deal. These are orchestra section seats and very limited, so log on to newsradio1440.com and click on the sweet deals link to get yours right now before they're gone. All right, we are going to jump to the phones here in just a sec. Let's go to Soldier Boy on line one, somebody I haven't heard from in a little while. Hey, Soldier Boy, how's everything?
A blast from the past.
I know, right?
Absolutely. Hey, what was the, I noticed yesterday when I was trying to watch some television, some high-quality television, ABC, CBS, and NBC all cut in whatever was showing at that particular moment and went straight and made a big freaking deal about Donald Trump at Paris. They made it sound like a tsunami had just hit the East Coast or a tornado had just hit the Midwest or the California had San Andreas Fault had finally fallen off, thank God. I mean, they cut in like, I thought there was a missile fire from North Korea or something, and it was on its way.
Well, you have to keep in mind,
all for nothing.
It's so funny about all that, because you talk about making a mountain out of a molehill. The media lost their freaking minds yesterday, saying that this was an act of war, that now we're going to be at war with every country in the world except for apparently Saudi Arabia and Nicaragua, which are the only two that aren't in on this, saying that Donald Trump is now a traitor and is worthy to be arrested, saying that the planet is now going to be destroyed in less than 100 years. I mean, the man said, no, we're not going to adhere to the climate accords, and you would have thought he declared war on Russia, and we had already started lobbing missiles back and forth.
Well, they all explained and made it sound like, you know, the old the apology tour continued on from President Obama, that we were the, what do you call it, we were the greatest polluters in the world, and we should pay a more larger percent of helping clean up the planet. Well, if you know,
which, by the way, we don't even make the top 20 when we're talking about countries that pollute.
Exactly.
But yeah, go ahead.
You know who number one is, don't you?
Who's
the letter C? China.
I don't think China's number one. They're definitely up there, but India's really high.
Oh, yeah, because of their population?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, China's on up there. You're right.
Going on over there, huh?
China's... that's probably
true. That sewer system ain't working too well over there, huh?
Well, that and also they don't kill any of the cattle, and I know they produce a lot of methane. So if they just ate more beef, they would be saving the planet. That's how to save the planet, I guess. I don't know.
But didn't they... I can't believe... I mean, they were cutting in for very important news. I'm like, what happened? They launched a nuke? I'm like... I was running to my bank and getting my money out as fast as I could. I was getting bread at Winn-Dixie. I was buying milk at Publix. I was making tuna can runs.
Man, it sounds like you were prepping for the snowpocalypse, soldier boy.
And Channel 12 preempted Judge Judy.
How dare they?
They did. I'm just glad I didn't cut in during Jerry Springer. I couldn't believe the show. They did cut in on
Wait.
And Judge Judy.
If they had cut in on Jerry Springer, it's sad that the Jerry Springer show would have been the tamer option to go with on TV the media reacted to this.
And did you hear he's thinking about running for governor again?
Or I actually have. Mayor? Yeah, I have heard that, actually. I heard that he had talked about that, floated that around.
As soon as I heard that, I went down to Walmart and bought me some new underwear. I figured I'm going to soil my underwear, so I better buy some new ones. But if he's going to become governor, I mean, my God, that's like the apocalypse.
See, that's the problem. The entire world's coming to an end, and nobody knows why. But the media, they can sense it, and so they're just trying to figure out what's going to cause it.
Well, I just want to let you know, Caleb, and your co-host there, should it come, you guys can come over to my house in East Montgomery. I got plenty of peanut butter and tuna.
Ooh.
I am stacked up.
I do like some peanut butter, and we'll just have a great big apocalypse party before the world turns into a greasy fireball the way Al Gore is saying.
Due to radioactivity, we won't have any, dish coming through my dish, but we'll have plenty on my DVR recorded for, you know, I got the whole collection, 39 episodes of the original Star Trek, so come on over.
Ooh, that will be fun, and I'll bring over my copies of Smallville, so that'll be good. We'll have plenty of entertainment.
All right, guys. It's good talking to you again.
Yeah, good to hear from you, soldier boy. Appreciate it. Appreciate
that
your thoughts on that.
That reminds me, to tell the truth, old quiz show.
Yeah, game show. I remember.
And I've got it on my Facebook page. They had one of the, I guess, foolers. You know, they have two imposters and the real guy. The real guy was Gene Roddenberry. This was in 1974, and he was one of the three people, and they had to figure out who was the real Gene Roddenberry. I've got that whole episode on Facebook, my Facebook page. It's fascinating.
Well, we need to get it on DVD so when the apocalypse happens and all the internet goes out, then we can still watch it.
And I don't want peanut butter and tuna together. No, I might have.
Yeah, don't mix them. Yeah, right. That's not what he's saying. He's saying we have peanut butter and tuna that we can eat at separate times.
Oh, I thought he meant, like, sandwiches.
No, don't do that. But anyway, all right. So yeah, good to talk to Soldier Boy. One of the things that I thought was the most hysterical out of all the media coverage, and I laughed at this practically till I cried, is that all the commentators, especially the ones, granted, I watch CNN more than any other, so I kind of pick on them more than any other just because it's the one that I see the most often. But I saw this on CNN and ABC News as well. They were talking about how this movement by Donald Trump, again, which has absolutely no legal bearing, no policy bearing whatsoever, just like no other president would, means that America is no longer a world leader. We have been dethroned as the world's leader from the world stage. First of all, does anybody really believe that all of our clout as Americans, as a leader on the world stage, comes from our carbon footprint? Really? That's what we think? That's the reason that other countries listen to us and pay attention to us? It could be that we're the biggest military power. It could be because we're arguably the biggest. Maybe, maybe not, but we're certainly in the top tier when it comes to economic power. When it comes to innovation, we're definitely on up there in several areas, especially medicine. I really don't think how much CO2 we emit, which, by the way, as I've already stated, is significantly less than a lot of other major countries, is the reason that the rest of the world pays attention to us. I just don't buy that. But I'm not actually asking this question rhetorically. And I know that's surprising, but when I ask, does anyone really believe that our clout comes from our carbon footprint? I'm genuinely asking that. Are there actually people out there? Because based on the media coverage that I'm seeing, I can't tell if it's an act to drum up, you know, suspense and drama, or if they're being serious. Do these people actually believe that the reason America is America and the reason we're seen as a world leader is because we lead the charge? And I'm putting that in air fingers quotes, of course, that we're leading the charge on climate change? That's why they think we have influence? Because if that's the case, I got to say you're kind of on the side of delusion here for a second. And I want to say this about the whole America being a world leader thing. It is better to not be a leader. And I don't think that this has anything to do with our bearing on the world stage, like I said. However, it is better to not be a leader than to lead somebody down a wrong path. Because if you really want to hurt your credibility as a world leader, do that a few times. Lead countries down a false path that leads to bad things for them, then you really will lose your credibility. And so on something like this that really doesn't matter all that much, if we lead them in this charge, and it winds up being a whole bunch of hooey, which I believe it is, then it's actually better for us to not be involved. And let's say this whole thing falls apart and comes crashing down, and America is one of the only three countries that aren't involved in it. Well, who looks like the idiot then? So if you believe that this is a problem, it's better to not be a leader at all than to lead somebody down a wrong path. Something to think about. Take it away, Rush. We'll be right back. For the times they are changing.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 3:20. For our citizenship is in heaven, from which also we eagerly wait for a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440, as always, are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Now, we've been talking about the Paris Climate Accords and Donald Trump withdrawing from an accord that we were never actually technically in. But regardless, so one of the things that the media was crowing about is that we'll no longer be a world leader. And one of their big complaints with this is that China is going to take over as the world's leader in climate change. And there's a couple things that I want to bring up. First of all, since when is that a concern for the liberals? Because one of the things we heard from Donald Trump, whether you love him or hate him, over and over and over and over again, and frankly, I thought this was way overplayed and somewhat mischaracterized by the president, presidential candidate, then president-elect, and then, of course, the president himself. He talked about how China was kicking our butt in everything, how they were our rivals, we needed to suit up, buckle down, take on the Chinese, and show them who's boss. And the liberals were saying, what an evil, hateful, racist he is by saying that America is first and we need to be at the forefront, we need to be a world leader. And then the second it suits their narrative, at the second that now they have something to say, well, China's going to take the lead and we'll be left in the dust, they do it. Now, I thought that the whole China thing was way overplayed by the Trump administration, but are the liberals really trying to make the argument now that the reason that they're concerned and worried about the Paris Climate Accords is because they're afraid China's going to take charge and be the leader here? Because that's really not something that I'm too concerned about. Again, if they take the lead on something that is a bad idea, then by all means, let China take the blame for it. I am all for that. 10 times rather China take the blame for this than America. Furthermore, let's be honest about this whole thing. When it came to the Paris Climate Accords, China was running the show anyway. Now, you may be sitting there thinking, well, President Obama was leading the charge on this. Oh, really? Let me tell you something about what the Paris Climate Accords did. China had made it up. This was part of the agreement to get China on board. Because keep in mind, they are one of the world's biggest polluters. One of the provisions that China was given so that they would agree to this is that they were to be treated as a developing country for the first 20 years. China, the most populated country on Earth, was considered a developing country for the first 20 years. In other words, the same regulations that applied to third world countries like, oh, I don't know, Zimbabwe or whatever.
Bangladesh.
Right. countries that you can't pronounce and have never heard of before. China, the most populated country in the world, and one of the most technologically advanced, was to be treated as a developing country for the first 20 years. Now, what does that mean? Because here's the thing, and this is the shell game that people are playing with the Paris Climate Accords. This has nothing to do with science and nothing to do with the environment. This has everything to do with redistribution of wealth. And not just redistribution of anybody's wealth, redistribution of America's wealth. The Paris Climate Accords were going to cost us $3 billion to help developing countries like China offset their cost for lowering their carbon emissions. So one of the things that we were doing is we're taking a portion of that $3 billion, giving it to developing nations to help pay for them cleaning up their own pollution, which for the first 20 years included China. And it also meant that for the first 20 years, China didn't have to spend a dime or do anything. That was part of the way that we got them on board with these climate accords. China is home to 4 of the world's top 20 most polluted cities in the world. Now, granted, India definitely holds the record there because I think they have about 12 of them. But my point is, China is one of the biggest violators of this. And since this was all about the environment and helping clean it up, what it essentially did was China got to be thought of as a developing nation. They get some of America's money. Here's the problem with all that. Now, you may say, well, that's enough to get me off. Well, probably so, but there's even more to it than that. Where does our money come from? Well, we're in debt, which means we actually have a lack of money, if anything. So, if we don't have enough money to keep ourselves afloat with the taxpayer, we're getting it from somewhere, and the country who buys most of our debt is China. Which means, and follow me on this, we were taking money, borrowing it with interest from China to then agree to the Paris Accords and then give some of that money back to China. That would be like if I went up to Joe, saw that his house, his yard's real messed up. He's got grass, you know, knee high and trash all over the yard. And I went to Joe and I was like, Joe, your yard is a mess. So here's what I want you to do. If you will loan me $50, I will pay you $50 to let me clean up your yard. Would you take that deal?
Let me think it over a minute. No.
and then on top of that, I also have to pay interest on the $50 because I took it out as a loan. So China's getting our money on both ends of the spectrum. Now, anybody that's been listening to me for any period of time knows that I'm not a big Trump fan, don't like his policies, don't agree with most of the stuff, actually, that he said on the campaign trail. But when he was saying we were making stupid deals, that the rest of the world was laughing about us, this is exactly what he was talking about. That we're borrowing money from another country at interest, which we have to pay back to them, so that we can engage in programs that send money back to the person we owe money to. And they get that money for free. It doesn't make any sense. So if you want to say that China's going to take over and be the leader, let's be honest, China was leading this charge anyway. Being in charge of this whole thing is the only way that China would have gotten a deal like that. So it's important to ask this question because I do want to get into the logistics here. That's just part of the policy. So what do the accords actually do? Now, keep in mind, every single thing that I'm about to tell you is working under the assumption that climate change is a reality, that it is exactly as serious as the scientists say that it is, and by scientists I mean their scientists, and that it's 100% real, it is deadly, it will destroy the planet, and the Paris Climate Accords are going to do exactly what they say they will. So for this, I take you to, and I know I'm delving in pretty deep for a Friday, but please just follow me on this. Global Policy, Volume 7, Issue 1, pages 109 through 118. This is a peer-reviewed journal that was put out by many of the same scientists that actually wrote the Paris Climate Accords, giving a review of it and explaining what it does. So this is their science using their data, assuming that climate change is real and the Paris Climate Accords are going to help with that. This comes from the section labeled Impact of Current Climate Proposals, talking about the Paris Climate Accords. Their claim is that if we don't do anything, nothing at all, if the Paris Climate Accords go away, that will result in a 4.5 degrees Celsius rise in the global temperature by the year 2100. So, if we do nothing, if the Paris Climate Accords never existed, the global temperature goes up by 4.5 degrees Celsius. That's it. With the Paris Accords, if every single nation adheres to it exactly the way that they claim they will for the next 100 years, and let's be honest, that's being ridiculously optimistic, because our own government, as well as other governments, never tend to actually adhere to these things the way that they say they will, because, you know, complications arise, it winds up costing money. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that every single country that signed on to this, which is virtually all of them, they adhere to every single letter of the Paris Climate Accord, and it all goes exactly according to plan. If that is the case, and it all works, that protects us from 33 billion tons of CO2 emissions. That's their number based on what the Paris Climate Accords are going to save us. According to them, that will bring that 4.5 degrees Celsius increase down by 0.05 degrees Celsius.
So, it's awful.
Yes. 5% of 1 degree Celsius is what the Paris Climate Accords, according to their own data, will prevent. That's it. Now, I'm not exactly a mathematician, but that seems to me like a pretty negligible difference. We're dealing with literally 5% of 1 degree over the course of 100 years, and this is what we're willing to pay other countries $3 billion for.
A degree and a half is almost negligible. I mean, that's not what it is, but
right.
Just
to... In fact, that's about, it's well over 100 times that a degree and a half would be. So this does virtually nothing and cost us a whole lot of money and headache on the way. Now, I want to go a little bit further into this before we hit this break. The number being thrown around by them that this might save is 2.7 degrees Celsius. That's what President Obama promised us when the climate accords were going into effect. But here's the thing. That number is actually based on an estimate of what nations might do in the future. Not based on what the Paris Climate Accord actually does. This is based on an imaginary number that might happen somewhere in the future if some of the countries do extra stuff on top of the Paris Climate Accords. That is actually 90 times, that's if they save 90 times more in CO2 emissions, which would require cutting about 3.1 trillion tons of CO2. Remember, this is all using their own numbers and figures. This is using their science, their data, not ours. This is assuming that climate change is all real and legitimate and just as terrifying as they're saying it's going to be. That's all that it's going to do. And the only way they could come up with a number that, frankly, 2.7 degrees doesn't even sound so bad. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure I don't even notice when it goes up 2.7 degrees Celsius, but I don't know. But even according to all that, it would still take them 90 times more than the Paris Climate Accords do just to get to their imaginary number that they made up for good PR. That's it. This thing does absolutely nothing. It's a huge waste of time, a huge waste of money. And even though President Trump withdrawing from it actually doesn't do anything, I applaud the fact that he's against it. That's the one good thing that comes out of this. I'm glad that, because he had seemed like he was kind of waffling on it there for a second, I'm glad that he's against it, even though being against it really doesn't technically do anything for us. But the point is, this is all just a shell game. It's about redistribution. It's not about science. It's not about the climate. It's not about any of this stuff. It's about other countries getting our money and us agreeing to it. At the end of the day, that's all the Paris Climate Accords did. It wasn't even going to save us anything. So, just something to consider. We got Mike on the phones. We got a couple other callers coming up. We'll take those when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
My hopes of a future life are all founded upon the gospel of Christ. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. Before we go to the phones, we will go there in just a second. We got Mike waiting on line one. He's been waiting patiently, but I wanted to mention this. This just popped up on my news feed. Apparently today is National Donut Day, which...
Oh, don't tell the cops.
Oh, well, yeah, they might all be down there. But I don't know. I'm pretty excited about National Donut Day. I think I may use that as an excuse to go fill my face with... I like those chocolate creams that the... what is it? Dunkin' Donuts has.
Yeah, like regular Christmas... We're an equal opportunity. free ad.
Yeah, we'll
here.
Just give a quick shout-out.
I like Krispy Kreme glaze. Just the regular traditional glaze.
I like those, but only if it's got the hot and ready sign flashing. Like, if it's just out of the glaze, then I love those, but... I typically just don't like them after they've been sitting out for a while, so I don't know. I guess I'm weird like that. There's a local business here that they're right on that main street in Millbrook. Mm-hmm. Doughboys.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it.
Yeah, really good.
I've heard of it.
I need to bring some up here someday.
Well, why don't you?
I will do that. If I'd known it was National Donut Day, I probably would have, actually. But all right, let's go to the phones. Mike on line one. Good morning, Mike.
Man, y'all make me hungry. I can't have those things anymore because of my prolific lifestyle. I'm now a diabetic. So.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Mike. We didn't mean to make you hungry. I'm getting a little hungry up here myself.
Yeah, well, you know, I was tickled pink yesterday when the president told them to go cut bait on that climate change thing. It is just a massive wealth redistribution scheme, and I'm sort of glad. It's not even a treaty, you know. I would have been glad if he would have just said, you know, we'll just send this over to the Senate and see what they'll do with it, because you know they'll reject it right out of hand. Well, at least I hope they will. You know, they got a couple of Republican, so-called Republican senators, John McCain and...
Yeah, you might have got your McCains and your Lindsey Grahams to vote for it, but the idea that we would have gotten a two-thirds vote on it, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't either, but, I mean, they would have gotten their shots in.
Oh, I'm sure.
As I'm sure they would have. But I was just... It would have been tickled me if he would have just said, well, what we'll do, we'll just send it to the Senate and let them vote on it. Because they never got it. They never voted on it anyway. So, but what's really been making me laugh is the reaction of the media and the leftists, you know, over in Europe, you know, especially the French representative. That's just been tickling me to death. So I've been in sort of enjoying this reaction to the rejection of it. So I
it has been entertaining. Mike, are you a superhero fan in any way? You read comic books, watch any of the superhero movies?
I occasionally do. I grew up, you know, with the Batman and Superman. I'm a big Batman fan, but
The reason I bring that up is because if you watch, if you've seen any of like the DC animated movies or seen any of the live action movies, not so much with the live action ones, but you'll occasionally see something like this. It kind of felt like, watching the news yesterday, felt like you were watching a superhero movie and watching one of those exposition newscasts that they do in the background to explain what's going on in the world.
Right.
That's what it felt like. You could have just about the reaction that they were giving, you could have replaced the dialogue with, and once again the Chitauri have invaded Earth and the Avengers are on it right now. And it would have been about the same reaction. You wouldn't have been able to tell the difference.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I thought you were going to tell me I won like a superhero novel or something.
I'm just kidding.
But no, that's true. Yeah, you're right. I guess that is comparable.
It was the only thing I could think of to try to explain exactly how overzealous the media was on trying to make this into a huge deal when it really meant absolutely nothing.
Right. And it continues today. But I don't know. I don't say Republicans, because I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. So
right.
It's a conservative, you know. So, you know, when someone calls me a Republican, I take it as an insult, really. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just been having some fun with it. You know, it's great to see all these people just blow their minds, you know, just lose their minds over this thing, and it, as long as it keeps going in this direction, I'm all for it. So
yeah, thank you so much for your call, Mike. I appreciate that. One of the things that is funny to me is sometimes the best way to handle ridiculousness is to just laugh, because the media took this dead serious. This was a matter of national security. The planet was going to explode in 60 years if we didn't adhere to the Paris Climate Accords. The best response, so far as I can tell, is to just laugh. Because I think, really, one of the biggest problems that the left has is too many people have taken them seriously for too long. Because that does play into your psyche a little bit. It gives you this mindset of importance. And I think that not all, but the reason a lot of liberals tend to be pretty arrogant and take the moral high ground is because people have taken them too seriously for too long. And one of the reasons that I think the media, especially over the past, I would say roughly 10 years maybe, the reason that the media started losing their mind a little bit is because there are people that don't take them as seriously as they used to. And I think a lot of that has to do with new media. Not just talk radio, of course, which is the best form of media, but also you have new news outlets with the internet. You have people that have opposing views. For a long time, the media, what they said was gospel. What they said was the end of it. I mean, Walter Cronkite, not to diss Walter Cronkite, but his lead out was, and that's the way it is. And back then, that's kind of how people viewed CBS Nightly News and those other outlets. Now we can do our own research. We have all these tools at our disposal. It has unseated them from that position of always being taken seriously. Hour 2 coming up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Well, everybody, it's finally Friday, and you know what that means. It's time for a brand new Top 10. Welcome back, everybody. Hour two of the Patriot Preacher is on now. I've got the Nerd Herd with me. We're missing Chris, but we have AJ and Andrew, so glad to have them with us. It is Friday, as everybody knows, so we've got yet another Top 10.
All right.
This week's Top 10, the Top 10 Children's Books about terrorism. You guys may remember there was a story about a book on how to teach children about terrorism in the UK that came out. We talked about this yesterday. That came out in the United Kingdom earlier this week. So this week's top 10 is the top 10 children's books about terrorism. Number 10, Green Eggs and Hamas. Number 9, The Sisterhood of the Traveling Burqa. Number 8, One Fish, Two Fish, I Hate Jew Fish.
Oh. Ouch.
Number 7, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stoning.
Oh.
Number 6, Little Red Riding Hijab.
That one kind of makes sense.
Number 5, Oh, the Places You Will Explode.
Oh, that's awful.
Very dark humor for this top 10. Number 4, The Lion, the Witch, and the War Drone.
The War Drone.
Number 3, Blow Up the Bridge to Terabithia.
Oh my goodness.
Man.
Number 2, Alice's Adventures in Taliban.
Who came up with this stuff?
And here we go, guys. The number 1 children's book about terrorism. If You Give an Imam an Infidel.
Oh, man. That's really good.
People what? Have too much time on their hands to come up with it.
No kidding. I'm one of them, apparently. That is the top 10 children's books about terrorism. Thanks for listening, everybody. Before we go to a break, I did want to mention one more thing. That's our good friends down at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. These guys have been in business for 50 years. Great service. They know their customers. They know this area. And most importantly, they know cars. Automobiles, if you need new tires, they can put you with exactly the brand and the model of tire that you want. You'll be able to align it, make sure everything's on the up and up. If you need just a simple oil change, you need major engine repair, regardless of what it is, they're going to be able to help you out at Jim Windham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center right here in Montgomery, Alabama. So go check them out on the Troy Highway today. That is Windham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. We'll be right back.
Is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Matthew 22:37-40. And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Patriot Preacher here on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. By the way, we do have Andrew and AJ back for another segment. Just for those of you who may not be aware, the other night, our president, Donald Trump, was doing what he normally does, and by that I mean tweeting late at night, and he let this tweet, somehow everybody on the White House staff missed it. This is the tweet. I'm not editing it. This is the exact wording of it. This was at about 12 o'clock Wednesday night, 12 a.m. Despite the constant negative press, covfefe, covfefe. So there's been a ton of internet stories and tweets about what this means. And I wanted to give my theory, get you guys' reaction to it, see if you guys have maybe an alternate theory. I think this is what happened. I think that Donald Trump was tweeting on the John, and he drops his phone, picks it up, and when he picks up the phone, I think he was trying to say media coverage, but after he got to COV, he drops his phone, picks it up, his thumb accidentally hits the FEFE a couple times, and then accidentally clicks send. He's like, okay, well, when I get done here, I'm going to delete that, forgets about it, goes to bed. That's what I think happened. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I think probably happened in this and why it got left up all night. What do y'all think?
Could he have been drunk tweeting?
Well, that's the thing. Donald Trump actually does not drink alcohol at all. So he wasn't drunk tweeting.
Let me see. Does he have an iPhone or a Troll?
I really have no idea. I've got a couple other theories on this, and here's what I thought was really funny, because this became the biggest hashtag on Twitter for that night, and it's really kind of come to a head. Everybody's talking about covfefe. He let out a follow-up tweet just the morning after when he woke up. He deleted the original tweet when he woke up and then tweeted this out. Who can figure out the true meaning of covfefe? Enjoy. So the president has offered a challenge to the American people, and as citizens, I think it's our duty to step up to that challenge. And... So now we have to figure out what covfefe means. I got a couple different theories on it. You guys are free to throw out anything that you might think that it could be. I thought about this one. Maybe it's like a pet name for Melania. Yeah, you're my little covfefe. Like, maybe that's his nickname for her.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know. That's what I think.
You know that the next Trump press conference or rally or whatever, people are going to be shouting that out.
Oh, yeah, they're going to have big hashtag covfefe signs up at the rally.
I may be one of them, just saying.
So, breaking news. Pentagon officials scramble to change nuclear code from covfefe.
Maybe that's what it was. It was the codes to the nuclear football.
That's pretty good.
Thanks a lot, Mr. President. Leaking that all over the internet. This is another one that I thought was really funny. I don't know if y'all have seen it. Of course, all of us being big Pokemon fans here, it could be what happens when you fuse an Eevee with a coughing. You get a covfefe. So maybe if you didn't get that joke, don't worry. It just means you're over 35. So don't worry about it.
My wife thinks that it could be the White House Wi-Fi password.
Ooh, oh, that's pretty like that. Good. Maybe he lost connectivity, was trying to type it in, and that's why it got tweeted out.
Maybe.
Who knows? There was another theory on there that it's a French breakfast pastry.
Kind of sounds like
it. Kind of sounds like it. Maybe. Maybe. Oh, I like this one. The animal that lives on Trump's head. It's a covfefe.
Like the Tribbles in Star Trek.
Right. Now, there are a number of internet conspiracy theorists surrounding Trump. I know that surprises everyone. But there are some people that believe that covfefe is some kind of code word between him and Putin. And this is him sending out a signal to Putin. And so Putin probably wakes up this morning, reads us, uh-oh, covfefe. that's some kind of alert or message to Putin. You will explain this covfefe to me. Maybe that was it. I'm not sure.
I feel like the NSA is about to go check in on this now.
Well, of course, they are listening to the show, I'm sure. So they're going to be scanning for covfefe in the the chatter between America and Russia, the most likely scenario that I've seen is it's a confusing tweet that drives the internet crazy. That one's probably the most accurate definition I've seen.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. You think maybe Trump did this on purpose, trying to get the bad press off of him?
Maybe.
Maybe. Well,
but see what he posts tonight.
That will be the test. Maybe it's a kind of spiked coffee that you have to drink to tolerate watching media coverage of Donald Trump.
My first thought when I saw people talking about it was there was some type of Starbucks drink.
I would like one tall coffee, please.
That's
please, Starbucks. Y'all are listening. Make that into a drink.
Please, I Starbucks. I don't even drink coffee. I really want to see the cafefe. I might even buy one just for the heck of it.
Just to have it at your show.
Right, the cafefe. I'll just have it on the radio. We'll do a live Facebook thing and just have the cafefe there. It does sound kind of coffee related. I can see that.
It does.
Oh, this is one of my favorites. It's an Icelandic word meaning little hands and big mouth. I don't know. That one makes sense to me. Here's another one I heard that I thought made a lot of sense. A medical term for a chronic tweeter.
Okay.
So Trump is a covfefe. He tweets constantly, ergo he's covfefe.
Would be a disease. He caught the covfefe.
That's an interesting conversation to have. You know Jim down there? Yeah, he's got that covfefe. He's not going to make it. He's got the covfefe bad.
I wonder if that's related to that fungus.
Andrew, private jokes don't work when we're talking on the radio.
I just wanted to say that on the air.
Well, congratulations, Knowles. We're all laughing. Nobody in the audience has any idea what we're talking about.
Everybody thinks we're just a bunch of crazy old guys that get on their internet and talk now.
Well, let's be honest. They're probably not all that far off if that's the case.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right. Lots of interesting things. Maybe one day we will discover the true meaning of covfefe, which kind of sounds like the end of a Christmas movie. We'll discover the true meaning of Christmas. But when we figure out what covfefe actually means, the official definition, we will get back to you. I promise we'll cover it. I'm sure it'll be the biggest news story of the year. When we find out what covfefe is, we will return to you with that information. We're gonna. I can't even do this show seriously anymore. I've got the covfefe. Guys, this is what my life has turned into. It kind of amazes me that a part of my job is to monitor Donald Trump's Twitter feed. That's an actual part of my career now.
He has a gold mine of material, so job security, right?
That's true, and that's the one thing, whether you love Trump, absolutely despise Trump, you can't say he's boring. The man's never been boring. All right, guys, we're going to be back. 860-1440 are the numbers. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
It is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. George Washington.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. So we have a couple more things to talk about this week. I wanted to talk about the general direction of the Trump administration, some of the things that's been going on. AJ, I think, has a pretty good idea of where I'm going with this, but we're gonna get to a couple of things. The first example I wanted to give is it became a really popular GIF that President Trump is essentially, he's at this NATO summit. So there's a lot of different countries there, a lot of different countries represented. And they're all stopping. All the leaders are getting together for the big photo shoot at the end, a picture of all of them together. And there's this one scene where Donald Trump just kind of weaves his way through the crowd and not just so much nudges, but actually grabs the shoulder of the Prime Minister of Montenegro, a guy named Dusko Markovic. The guy's the Prime Minister of Montenegro. Trump just kind of grabs him by the shoulder and pushes him aside, walks up to the front, straightens his tie and his jacket, and is like, all right, I'm ready for my picture now.
And it's a pretty forceful grab. Like, he almost slaps the guy, then shoves him out of the way.
Right. It's not so much like just a gentle tap on the shoulder to move aside. He actually kind of grabs the guy and pushes him backward. It's not like violent, and you can tell he didn't hurt him or anything, but it was pretty forceful.
Yeah.
So
he's like, you know, you were wrong. You know, you're in my way. You know, move.
Yeah, he was very assertive. I don't think anybody would argue with that. So the way that I see it, and I hope that a lot of you have seen it. I do wish that we could show it to you, but, you know, it's radio. So I was kind of going through this in my head. What was Trump thinking? And if I were to caption this with Trump's thoughts going through the video, I would have said that Trump was essentially like, back of the line, Montenegro. Most of the world doesn't even know who you are or where your country is. I'm America, back of the line.
I like kind of towards the end of the GIF where he kind of has that little slight jacket adjustment. He's like, you know, yeah, I'm supposed to be here.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really pompous.
It really is. It's pretty arrogant, which we're accustomed to seeing from Donald Trump.
Kind of posing.
He does just kind of like, all right, I'm ready for my photo shoot now. I really thought that it was funny. Now, it reminded me, and of course this is where my mind went because I was a fraternity brother at Auburn. It reminded me of one of the older brothers when the fraternity's about to take a picture of the entire frat, that he just kind of weaves his way straight to the front and pushes the younger brothers out of the way. That's what it kind of looked like to me. Is, pledge, get to the back of the line.
I can see Trump kind of having that frat boy attitude.
A little bit.
Nothing against all frat boys, but the stereotype for them, I can see him behaving that way.
A little bit, yeah. And so that's just kind of what it reminded me is, Montenegro, what's your problem? You know you're supposed to be back there. Make way for America. I think it may have been a bit much. What do you think, AJ? What was your opinion of this?
I think he really needs to take a chill pill and realize that, yeah, while, you know, the U.S. is arguably one of the most powerful nations out here, he needs to kind of keep himself in check and realize what position he's in and how the rest of the world is looking at him, especially whenever he behaves like this at the summit.
I agree 100% because I didn't like the fact that it made him come off as a little bit of a bully and kind of a jerk. However, I will say this in Donald Trump's defense, and I know that I don't usually come to the president's defense, but one of the things that the criticisms that I've seen in the media is, well, now people are going to say that arrogant Americans. Well, they were going to say that anyway. Does it play into the stereotype? Yes. Is that a good thing? No, it's really not. But at the same time, other countries are going to say that regardless of what we do. They said it when President Obama was in office. They said it when Bush was in office. So I don't think he caused some kind of international incident with this. It was not a smart thing to do. It doesn't look classy. Honestly, it kind of makes him look like a jerk. But
it's very bad PR.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, I will take erring on the side of looking like a jerk over what we've been seeing over the past 8 years with President Obama, which is looking like a wuss. Because President Obama was always, look, we're just America. We're no more important than anybody else. In fact, we're less important. We need to take a step back. We need to lead from behind. Obama seemed to be always the guy that kind of wanted to be in the background, where President Trump always wants to be in the forefront, always wants to be the center of attention. I don't like either approach, but if I have to take one or the other, I'm kind of going to err on the side of looking like a jerk over looking like a wuss. That's just me. Maybe it's a personality flaw of mine. I would rather have neither. In fact, the guy that I voted for, I think, would have done neither of those things. But if I have to pick one over the other, I don't know. I kind of like Trump's attitude a little bit more than I like the we're not that important, let's all just fade into the background kind of mentality that Obama had.
Yeah, neither President Obama or Trump had humility in their position. Obama had no spine. You know, he was to the point of a fault, being meek. We're not that great. We're just the United States. But Trump takes the exact opposite approach and just as wrong as we're the United States. We're the best. Yes, some things we are, of course. But you got to have that humility whenever you approach world leaders like that.
Oh, I agree. And I don't want a president to take Donald Trump's apparent approach, and I don't know what's in the man's heart, but it seems to, when he's talking about foreign affairs, Donald Trump's mentality is, we're America, ergo nobody else even matters. Barack Obama's mentality seemed to be more, well, we're America, which means we've had it too good for too long, and we've kind of been the world's bully, and we don't need to do that anymore, so we're just going to take a backseat to everybody and not be forceful, not come from a position of strength. Neither one of those approaches are really good, in my opinion. And I think that what you pointed out about seeing the exact opposite, I think that's part of the reason people voted for Trump. Because whether you like it or not, even if you dislike the guy, part of the reason that the Trump voters went so hard for somebody like Donald Trump that does kind of have that mentality, I believe, is because, frankly, they got sick and tired of being pushed around by other countries the way President Obama let other countries do. They kind of let him by the nose on a lot of things, and I think there's some legitimacy to that, having a problem with that. Now, I'm not saying they should have voted for Trump as a response, but I think that's part of the draw that people saw to him.
Oh, definitely.
So I wanted to talk about this too, AJ, and I know that you're a big fan of this guy, so you're going to enjoy this particular conversation. I want to play a clip from General James Mattis, who's our National Defense Secretary.
Oh, Mad Dog.
Yep, old Mad Dog Mattis. This is General James Mattis on Face the Nation.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Secretary of Defense James Mattis.
Oh my gosh, James Mattis just went beast mode live on Face the Nation. I absolutely love that clip. AJ, you ever seen The Watchmen, the movie?
I have not.
Well, there's a great scene in there, and if you are out there and you haven't seen it either, you need to look this clip up. There's a scene where Rorschach, one of the main characters, he's in a prison. He's been captured. And he's in there with a bunch of the prisoners, and keep in mind, he's a superhero, which means a lot of the prisoners in there don't like him because he put them in prison. And so he's getting threats left and right. There's all these prisoners that hate him and want to jump him and kill him and whatever. And there's one scene where this guy is in the lunch line and he's threatening him. And Rorschach gets tired of it, so he breaks the glass in front of him, grabs a basket of fries soaked with hot oil, brings it over the top of his head and burns the guy with the oil. And he says, "You people don't understand. I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me." That's about the level of comment I think James Mattis just gave. But
I really like how it didn't sound like he really skipped a beat with a question. What keeps you awake at night? And he goes right into it. Nothing. I keep other people awake at night. Like, there was no thought. It just came out, and that's like, he's prepared for questions like that.
Yeah, it almost came out a little too fast, and that leads me to my next question. You think this was spur of the moment, or do you think Mattis has essentially just been kind of waiting for this question to be asked for years and had that answer already set?
I think probably both. Mattis being a Marine, being a very smart, higher up and powerful Marine these days with, you know, a lot of political power.
Right.
I wouldn't put it past him to kind of have those kind of answers prepared whenever a question like that comes across, because he's smart. He knows how he's portrayed. He knows the image that he has in the public, and he kind of rolls with it. Sometimes he kind of makes it on.
Oh, absolutely. It kind of sounded to me like he had that planned. I don't know if he did or not. If not, bravo. But I guess he had that line written by the same staff that writes all Clint Eastwood's lines. Maybe he's got some writers on loan from Clint Eastwood, which, actually, come to think of it, Clint Eastwood would make a fantastic James Mattis if they ever make a movie about him. Think about that. Clint Eastwood would be really good at that.
Yeah.
Do that whole Gran Torino thing. I keep other people awake at night. Of course, that was a little more Batman, but whatever. It was about as American as it gets, and this kind of combined with the Trump attitude. I have to be honest, I've been pretty critical of the Trump administration. I have good reasons for that. Some of the policies they do don't make sense. I think they're maybe a little overeager on the national stage. But I do kind of like the bravado that surrounds the Trump administration. I think it's kind of refreshing, especially after 8 years of Obama.
Yeah. I just really like how Mattis is a techno-kind of crap kind of guy. Whenever I found out that Trump had nominated Mattis for Secretary of Defense, I kind of maybe screamed a little bit, audibly, because I was so excited. I was in the Air Force before, so I had heard of James Madison, some of the stuff that he did. You know, he is a very down-in-the-trenches kind of leader. He's not your typical leader that you have these days where they lead from afar. Everybody but me charge. He's the kind of guy that says, okay, I'm going to charge, and if you dare join me, you know, by all means, do so. His leadership that's really respected, and I knew that he would really take Secretary of Defense position really, really well. And so far, he really has.
James Mattis is one of the most credible, most reliable people in the Trump administration. Out of all of Trump's appointments, I would say Mattis is probably my favorite. And
same.
And I say that specifically because the Trump administration's appointments, whether they're official positions or more ceremonial positions, very much a mixed bag for me. Some that I absolutely loved, some that I couldn't stand. But when it comes to Mattis, I think the only other person that kind of measures up is Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. So those two are probably the height of what I thought was a good idea for the Trump administration. I've been really pleased with the job James Mattis is doing. Really hope that it continues. And if this line is indicative of the kind of job that he does, and I believe that it is, then it's going to be a really fun 4 years. All right, AJ, thanks for being with us. Appreciate your comments. We're going to be back in just a minute.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, as always. But before we get into the sermon, I did want to mention a couple things. First of all, the Decades Rewind is coming to the Montgomery Performing Arts Center for one night only, June 22nd, to present the biggest hits of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, beginning at, they're on sale right now, it looks like, so you can score two tickets for the price of one with our latest sweet deal. These are orchestra section seats, very limited, so log on to newsradio1440.com right now and click the Sweet Deals link to get yours right now before they are gone. It's going fast, so be sure to check those out very quickly. Also wanted to mention this because we had a question coming in from Twitter. The Deplorable Patriot, who's tweeted us before, which, by the way, if you want to tweet us, have some of your tweets read on the air, you can check us out at The Patriot Preach on Twitter. You had a question, Jordan?
I remember the deplorable, his words, patriot or what. Yeah, he's the one who was kind of giving us a hard time about the little actress who was in here.
Right, he misunderstood us about the...
Mary Poppins.
The Mary Poppins actress.
Said she's
right.
Definitely not a 10, but not... That's who that is.
Right. There was a little bit of miscommunication, which I appreciate that he brought up because it gave us a chance to clarify for anybody else that might have misunderstood.
Exactly. I mean, he probably wasn't the only one who said, sort of not nice.
Yeah, well, did want to bring this up, though. There was a little bit of confusion, and again, one of the reasons I appreciate Twitter is because you can have these quick questions. He was wondering about, he asked me to thank AJ for telling him about Shelby's Donuts, which are the best apple fritters in Montgomery. So free shout out to them, by the way, thanks to the Deplorable Patriot. So just to give some explanation, and he realized his error about halfway through that segment, this is a different AJ than caller AJ. The AJ I was just speaking to is one of my buddies from college. The AJ that most people that are listeners to talk radio here in Montgomery and probably know AJ pretty well because he calls into all the shows here, that's a different AJ. He lives here in Montgomery, completely different person. So just to clarify that, two different AJs that we're dealing with here. But if you do want a chance to ask any questions, ever want to comment on the show, you can always do that at Patriot Preach if you're on Twitter. So we are going to get into the Star Spangled Sermon. And one of the things I like to do, I don't always do it, but one of the things I like to do on Fridays, especially with the Star Spangled Sermon, is give kind of a lesson that I think sums up the week. And this week that was really easy because, well, not because I only did two shows this week, but the entire news week, even when I was gone, is really this whole thing has been a massive reminder. This entire week has been a reminder that increasingly, whether you're a celebrity or whether you're an everyday person, your life is out in the open. The more we get through social media, the more exposure that we give ourselves, not only through the internet, but through other means as well, it seems like increasingly more and more our lives are open for the entire world to see. We saw this with the covfefe. Donald Trump just kind of mistweets, and it becomes a national phenomenon for 2 or 3 days. So, and I get that he's the president, and there's some notoriety that comes with that. The average person can't do that. But my point is, just something as simple as a misspelling becomes a national phenomenon. We've got Kathy Griffin with what she did with the Donald Trump head. Of course, that became something everybody was talking about, even though it was a very short thing. We had the Donald Trump's thing with the Prime Minister of Montenegro, just pushing the guy out of the side. He thought, I'm sure he was not thinking at the time, this is going to be a huge national news story. And then we've also got, and Joe and I were actually talking about this during the break, Tiger Woods and what happened with him last week. Something that I'm sure that he didn't think was going to be splashed all over the newspapers and the internet, but this becomes a huge thing. Things that I'm sure a lot of these people thought either were going to be at least semi-private or certainly not things that would get as much attention as they did became huge things that a lot of people in this country and all over the world were talking about. So with that in mind, it reminds us that our lives are increasingly more and more publicized. I want to go to some biblical wisdom here for this. Let's look at Luke 12, 1 through 3. This is Jesus Christ talking. In the meantime, when they were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trod upon one another, he, talking about Jesus, began to say this to the disciples first of all, Beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. Therefore, whatsoever you have spoken in darkness shall be heard in the light, and that which ye have spoken in the ear in closets shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. There's a couple things it's important to note here. First of all, this is just on its surface, Jesus telling this that everything that we've done in secret, every part of our lives that we've kept hidden, one day is going to be declared to everybody. A second part of it is, if you know a little bit of biblical history, this is very similar to the language used with King David. When David committed his sin with Bathsheba, when he slept with her without being married and then wound up killing her husband, God specifically said to him, this which you have done in secret, this which you have tried to conceal and keep away from everybody else, is going to be declared to all of Israel from the housetops. And what eventually happened in that prophecy is years later, David's own son wound up going out on the rooftop of the palace and having relations with David's concubines. So this thing that David had tried to keep secret, had tried to keep from anyone finding out, even really kind of tried to hide from God, which good luck with that, it comes to full fruition later on in his life. This thing that he tried to keep everybody from knowing about is now what everybody in the country is talking about. And so when Jesus says this to this mass of Jews, they understood the historic context of that. They understood what he was saying and what he was alluding to. So what is Jesus actually saying here? Every action that we take is going to be made public someday. Now, it may not happen in this life, in this side of eternity, but when we stand there in judgment before God, the entire world is going to know every dirty little secret that we've ever done. It's going to be declared to everyone. And the truth is, that shouldn't be what scares us. What should scare us about that scenario is that God already knows about it. That his judgment, which is absolute, That's what really matters, and he already knows all that stuff anyway. It's petty and small for us to be worried about what our fellow man thinks about it. Not saying that we should never take any concern about what our neighbors, our friends think about us. I'm not suggesting that at all, and that's not what Christ is saying. But what I am saying here is that when it comes to other people's opinions of us, shouldn't we be far more worried about God's opinion of us? And he's the one that knows all the things that are done in secret anyway. So what Christ is really trying to convey to us here is if God's opinion is what really matters, and one day, whether it's on this side of eternity or whether it's one day in judgment, everything that we do is going to be known to everybody else anyway, why not just live in such a way that we don't really have any secrets? That any secrets that we might have are secrets that wouldn't destroy us if they got out. Secrets that wouldn't embarrass us. Does that mean we're never going to be humiliated? No. Does that mean there aren't things that we wouldn't really kind of rather keep to ourselves? No. But what it does mean is he is encouraging us to live in such a way that any of our actions, if they were to be made public, it would not destroy us. See, this is the difference in character and reputation. Reputation is also talked about as being important in the scripture elsewhere, and that's a lesson for another day. So I'm not saying reputation means nothing. But the difference in character and reputation is that character is the person that you are when nobody's looking. Character are the decisions that you make when you don't profit from them. When you are faced with a decision of doing right and doing wrong, and you know that doing right's not going to do anything for you, or doing right's not going to get you any accolades from anybody else. Sometimes even when doing right, you know is going to end up with you being ridiculed, and you still make that decision anyway, that's character. That's what that means. There was a good bit of advice that I got from a debate coach a long time ago, who many of you may know him as John from Millbrook, my father. He said, you always have to practice like you play. And what he meant by that, in terms of debate, is that you don't give it a half effort when you're in practice. And you don't practice in such a way that it's not like the actual debate. If you're going to get better, you have to practice in such a way that to make it similar as it will be when you're performing. The way that I improve my conversation on the radio, and granted, I'm a young radio host, so I'm still working on that. But the way I improve my skills on the radio, my conversation on the radio, is I try to improve my conversational skills when I'm just talking with my buddies. And that's exactly the same principle here. So what I'm encouraging everyone to do, air out your dirty laundry and be honest. Because once you do that, nobody can touch you. Even those horrible, embarrassing things that are in your past, and everybody's got them, including me. If that's out in the open and people already know about it, then there's really nothing anybody can do that can threaten you, blackmail you, none of that. Because everybody already knows that stuff anyway. Now, it's not easy. It takes swallowing your pride, and it takes facing your own demons. But it's better to get it out of the way on your terms. In other words, it's going to take humility, and it's going to take courage, both of which are described as virtues. And Christ shows us that example in his own sacrifice. Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.